Ramayana Balakanda Part 5. Later in the day, as the party approached Vishvamitra's ashram, which was known as Siddha Ashram, Ram inquired from the Rishi about the history of that holy place. And Vishvamitra then explained, "This Siddha Ashram was formerly the abode of Lord Vamana, who dwelt here for many hundreds of millenniums. Once, the demigods came to see Vamana Dev, requesting him to approach Bali Maharaj, who was engaged in performing sacrifices. Since the king of the demons had conquered the three worlds, the demigods petitioned Lord Vamana to take away his kingdom by begging. Just at this time, the great Kashyapa Muni also happened to arrive at Siddha Ashram, and after worshipping Vamana Dev with great devotion, he prayed for the Lord to appear as his son. The Lord agreed to do so, and thus later took birth as the dwarf Brahmana son of Kashyapa and Aditi. He thus fulfilled the purpose of the demigods, taking away the kingdom of Bali Maharaj, on the plea of begging for three steps of land. After finally arriving at his ashram, Vishvamitra immediately set about to perform his sacrifice, while Ram and Lakshman awaited the arrival of Maricha and Subahu, their bows in hand. 6 days and nights passed as the two brothers guarded the sacrificial arena, completely foregoing sleep. Then, on the critical sixth night, when the Soma Ras was about to be extracted, the sacrificial fire suddenly blazed brightly, indicating the imminent arrival of the Rakshasas. Soon thereafter, a fearful clamor was heard in the sky. Maricha, Subahu, and their followers swooped down without warning, causing torrents of blood, pus, stool, flesh, and other contaminated substances to rain down upon the sacrificial altar. Ram then told Lakshman, "I will subdue these evil Rakshasas with my weapons, but I shall not kill them, for they are destined to live some years more." Ram discharged a mighty weapon that struck Maricha in the chest and flung him 100 yojanas into the middle of the ocean, but did not kill him. Then, taking up another powerful arrow, Ram pierced Subahu's chest, causing him to fall down dead upon the ground. And by invoking a third weapon, Ram drove away all the other Rakshasas. Thereafter, the area again became calm. All the Rishis, who had previously resided at Siddha Ashram, joyfully returned home, congratulating Lord Ram for his wonderful accomplishment. That evening, the sacrifice was successfully concluded. After passing the night, Ram came before the Rishis inquiring, "O worshipable Brahmanas, now that this area has been freed from the disturbances caused by the Rakshasas, is there anything more that we can do to be of service to you?" At the behest of Vishvamitra, the Rishis replied, "We are about to depart for the kingdom of Mithila in order to take part in a grand sacrifice arranged by King Janaka. So we request you two brothers to accompany us. There is a wonderful bow being kept in the sacrificial arena that was formerly presented to the demigods by Lord Shiva. But later, the demigods gave that bow to Devarata, who was the king of Mithila long, long ago. This celestial bow is immeasurably strong, and even great demigods cannot bend it. What to speak of human beings? The bow has remained at Mithila for a long time and is being worshipped on an altar with flowers, sandalwood paste, and other auspicious articles. Ram agreed to accompany the rishis, and thereafter a great caravan set out with 100 cars loaded with the paraphernalia required for the sacrifice of Janaka Maharaj. And after traveling all day, the party reached the banks of the Shona River, where they stopped for the night. Then, while he was seated at leisure, Ram asked Vishvamitra if there was any particular history he could narrate concerning that place. Thus the Rishi related to Ram the following story. Once there was a great Rishi named Kusha, who was a direct son of Lord Brahma. Kusha had 4 Kshatriya sons, who founded 4 cities, one of which was on the banks of the river Shona. Kusha's son was Kushanava, who begot 100 daughters through the Apsara Gritachi. And when these girls grew up, they were very beautiful and would happily play together on the banks of the river. Once, the demigod of air, Vayu, happened to see these girls and became captivated by their exquisite beauty. Approaching them, Vayu said, "My dear beautiful girls, if you all agree to become my wives, I shall transform your fleeting human beauty into ever-fresh celestial youthfulness." But the girls had no attraction for Vayu, and instead felt insulted. And thus they replied, "We would never think of choosing our own husbands, for we will only marry according to the choice of our father. Being the daughters of a great Rajarshi, we certainly have the power to curse you for your vulgar behavior. However, we shall not do so, for we do not wish to diminish the accumulated merit of our austerities." Vayu, who is easily angered, became highly offended. Taking revenge, he subtly entered the bodies of the 100 girls, and by his mystic power, distorted their bodily features. When the girls returned to the palace crying, their father was shocked to see that they had all been transformed into hunchbacks. In reply to Kushanaba's inquiries, the girls related all that had happened. Maharaj Kushanaba congratulated his daughters for refraining from cursing Vayu, and then began considering how he could get them married. Previously, a great brahmachari named Chuli had been performing severe austerities. An unmarried Gandharva girl attended to him like a menial maidservant. Eventually, Chuli became pleased by the girl's selfless service and offered her a benediction. The girl requested the Rishi to give her an exceptional son while allowing her to remain a virgin. Chuli agreed, and thus appeared a mind-born son of great ascetic prowess named Brahmadatta. Later, Brahmadatta ruled as a king, and it was he who Kushanaba decided would be a suitable match for his daughters. Thus, after being invited to Kushanaba's palace, Brahmadatta accepted the 100 girls. Upon touching their hands at the marriage ceremony, one after another, their bodily deformities vanished, and each girl became once again beautiful. Vishvamitra then concluded his narration. Since Kushanaba had no son, however, He performed a sacrifice for that very purpose. And as a result, Gadi was later born to Kushanava, and I, Vishvamitra, am the son of that king Gadi.